It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
You know, this week we've been sponsoring Truth for Youth Bible Week, and I have to start with that first because I have something really special in just a second. Just came out of an important meeting, and I want you to know about it. But first, let me say that this is National Truth for Youth Bible Week. We're partnering with Engage Ministries, and the idea is to get a Bible which is illustrated. It's got some great resources for kids struggling with pornography, struggling with drugs, struggling with gender, all kinds of things are in this Truth for Youth Bible. And here's the deal. The Bibles are free. All we need is a one child. You have a teenager, if you are that teenager, ages 13 through 18, and you promise that you'll pass it along to someone in your school that you think could use it, that needs it at this time in their life, you can have one for nothing. All you have to do is call 1-800-733-4737. That's 800-733-4737. And you can get your free Truth for Youth Bible. And also along with that will come this, we have these great wristbands that say #6. And that's a reference to the sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill. We kind of think our kids are forgetting the basics of human decency, and so that's why we're offering this along with that Bible. So call 1-800-733-4737. That's 1-800-733-4737. Or you can go visit truthforyouth.com and order it online. That's truthforyouth.com. All right, I just came out yesterday of a very important meeting, actually very interesting. In the news this week, and even in open lines, we've discussed how social media is silencing the voice of conservatives. I said to you earlier, actually, I said to you a couple of days ago that I thought the day that Twitter and Facebook and others announced that they were removing Alex Jones and now some libertarians was kind of like the Kristallnacht of the First Amendment. This is like a laying down a line in the sand that is not acceptable, not because we all agree with Alex Jones or any of the libertarians, but because we believe in the freedom of speech that's guaranteed in our Constitution. Well, we just met with two Twitter executives and had an informative, fascinating discussion. And I've asked Jake Hoffman to join me. Jake is a digital activist. That means he helps conservatives PACs that are trying to help conservative candidates be more effective with their digital outreach. He's an expert on this. His company alone reaches 120 million different people each week, or I'm not sure each week or each day, but that's how many people they reach. Remember that we talked about Twitter shadow banning people like Congressman Matt Gaetz and other conservatives like on the Freedom Caucus, meaning that their Twitter sites did not come up when their names were entered easily. The head of the RNC, same thing. And when the comparison was done to the Democrats, it wasn't the case. We also know the story of Candace Owens, who was harassed this week by Antifa protesters, actually mimicked Sarah Young, who was hired by the New York Times, who is a racist who hates white people, is on record on Twitter of saying the most filthy, vulgar, hateful things, and has been on Twitter completely unrestrained for a very long time. So Candace Owens simply mimics her words and changes it to insult Jews and other ethnic groups, but she's doing the same thing, same language as Sarah. She was removed immediately from Twitter. That's just two examples. I wanted to set the stage for our discussion. So Jake joins us today to kind of give us his insights into what's happening. Jake, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Sandy.
Well, first of all, in the meeting today, the Twitter executive said to us that Twitter does not shadow ban conservatives. I just want to know what you think about that.
Well, so, I mean, you know, let's go back to the days of Bill Clinton, right? It depends on what the meaning of it is, right? I mean, it's what's the definition of shadow banning? And that's the conversation. You know, we tried to have that conversation yesterday with these executives, and that's, you know, they didn't have a concrete answer for it. because quite honestly, they don't want to have a concrete answer, because that would mean they'd be able, we could hold them accountable for it, right? And so, realistically, they want shadow banning to be this vague term that they can willy-nilly say, no, we don't do that. That's not something that's a part of our platform. When the reality is, what we're talking about is banning and censoring certain speech versus other. And whether that's a written rule within the company or whether it's an unwritten rule, it is happening. And conservative activists, conservative grassroots all across the country, conservative congressmen like Matt Gaetz, we see it happening. We feel it. We know that it's happening because it's happening to us, right? And so the reality is, they don't want to put a firm definition on that. And so that was really my takeaway from the shadow banning piece of that conversation. We talked about a lot of things, but the reality is, one of my biggest takeaways is the Twitter executive, and I mentioned this to him, I called him out on this, is they kept repeatedly saying that they haven't done a good job reaching out to Republicans or reaching out to conservatives. And look, it's nice that they want to admit that, but that characterization of the problem downplays the issue at hand. The issue isn't that Twitter has failed to do a good job. The issue is that there's been a systematic philosophy at the company of favoring a particular ideology over others. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg and some of the other executives, and when they testified before Congress, they made it abundantly clear that the overwhelming majority of their staffs in Silicon Valley are Democrats and are progressives, right? And so it's systematic, and it's filtering through to how they enforce policy and how they enforce, these terms like healthy conversation, right? That's right out of the Twitter policy, healthy conversation. So,
some of us have been meeting with some of these other groups. We've met with Google twice. This is my first time to meet with Twitter. Probably it's a lot of our first times. And I've sort of had the impression and been told that Twitter is the worst of the social media outlets in terms of their leftward bent. But it's one thing to think it, and certainly we have examples like I just gave, and you can give a lot more, of Twitter really editing, controlling what conservatives are able to get out and what they're able to see. But practically speaking, one of the things I heard you talk about yesterday was personnel. Jack Dorsey is this founder and CEO of Twitter. What do we know about where he stands on free speech?
Well, the reality is so what do we know? I mean, obviously we saw this with the CEO of Mozilla Firefox, I believe it was, a few years ago. I think it was Prop 8 in California. The marriage is between a man and a woman, right? And the Mozilla Firefox CEO, he donated to the pro-traditional marriage side of that debate, and they blackballed him from the industry and they pushed him out of the company, right? And so the reality is that the CEOs, they tend to stay as under the radar as possible. But what we do know about Jack with regards to Twitter is that he apologized for having lunch at Chick-fil-A, right? And so quite honestly, I mean, if you have to apologize because you had lunch at a company owned by Christians that the company owners support one certain ideological view in terms of marriage, that's pretty clear in terms of where you stand.
Yes, it is. And we know about other members. Several other members were called out by name, and there were a lot of knowledgeable people at that table who had proof of some of the tweets of some of the people that work for Twitter that were just appalling about how conservatives should be shut up. And yet the executives were claiming that there is no bias, that we're a free speech platform. And other than stopping people that want to perpetrate crimes like kill or rape or I forgot what the other category was, we don't really censor. But that's not true, is it, Jake?
It's not true at all. And quite honestly, I was getting rather frustrated because they kept using the most extreme examples of child pornography and things like that as justification for censoring. And look, those are illegal activities, right? Those are things that can already be shut down under the guise of being illicit, right? But the reality, and this was something that I brought up to him yesterday, was, there are a number of examples, and I can run through a couple of them here. Alinda Hassan, a policy manager for Twitter Trust and Safety, explains, quote, "We're trying to downrank, and I will change the word to be family-friendly, crappy, let's say. We're trying to downrank crappy people to not show up. We're working on that right now." Stephen Pierre, a Twitter engineer, explains shadow banning. It's going to ban a way of talking. Former Twitter software engineer, Abhinav Vadravu, on shadow banning. Quote, they just think that no one is engaging with their content when in reality no one is seeing it. And then lastly, Parne Singh, a Twitter direct messaging engineer on, and this is the really concerning part, I believe, on machine learning algorithms. Quote, you have like 5,000 keywords to describe a redneck. The majority of it are for Republicans. Right? These are Twitter executives' own words talking about the types of activities and philosophies that go into the enforcement and the creation of that platform.
So we have proof positive that there is such an incredible bias. I think someone on the call, someone, part of us were on the phone, some are in the room, said something about that something like maybe the two people in the room with us, actually both of them have affiliations with Republicans in the past. One of them was a former military man, and they certainly have their resumes would make them look like conservatives. But the observation was made, but they may be the only two conservatives. And as far as we can tell, when it comes to like their safety partners, they're not conservative outlets. In fact, what do you know about that, Jake? Do you know anything about their safety partners?
So their safety partners aren't conservative outlets. So I'm not quite as versed in terms of Twitter's safety partners. But what I can tell you is, you know, David Brock and Media Matters for America bragged in their donor prospectus. I believe this was just December of 2016, right after President Trump won the general election. He bragged in his donor prospectus that they had infiltrated the social media companies and that they were working hand in hand to develop the protocols and safety measures for the future that would protect people and ensure that speech was appropriate, right? So those are the types of, that are Democratic Party activists and power brokers, quite honestly, that are engaging in these activities and are embedding themselves within these companies to ensure that they have a firm grip on the controls and mechanisms that will eventually censor all of us.
You know, I just actually got a list of their Twitter. I'm just seeing it for the first time, of the Twitter safety partners. So this one was mentioned today, the Anti-Defamation League, which has just hurled to the left since an Obama friend has taken over. So, and Beyond Blue, we know what that means. That's the whole blue movement to turn the country blue. And, of course, it just goes on and on. There's a ton of them. Dangerous Speech Project. European Schoolnet. We know how Europe feels about free speech, and so that, and GLAAD, GLAAD, which is one of the most radical LGBT organizations in the country. I could just stop there, but that's the kind of people they're looking to arbitrate what should be on Twitter or not. You know, Jake, I just don't understand why. I guess I do, but I don't. I don't understand why Twitter, Facebook, and Google too can't just be open free speech platforms. Why must they, apart from criminal activity, why must they regulate and control anything? I mean, push back. Maybe I'm just not seeing something.
No, Sandy, I think you're right. I mean, or at least I think where your gut is correct, right? Look, the reason why these platforms, and to be fair to them, they didn't all start this way, right? They most of them started as the Wild West of free speech, which was fantastic. That's real freedom, where you can go and you can talk and have debate and dialogue. So initially they started, you know, likely with very good intentions, but over time and as the swamp has dug its claws down deep into these organizations, they have moved further and further and further
yes.
to the left.
Yep.
And the reality is that these companies, the reason why they don't want free speech, the reason why they want to censor us, conservatives, is because their ideas lose. In an
yes,
actual debate.
Exactly, totally. Jake Hoffman.
Ideas.
Yes,
yeah.
Which is true. And that's what separates us from the left. We want the free exchange of ideas, and they don't. Jake Hoffman, digital activist. Jake, you've done so much to contribute to the in ways that people will never know. And so, meanwhile, there are dialogues going on. We're doing our best to pull things back. Thank you so much, Jake. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
In keeping with President Reagan's legacy, I do not ask about a nominee's personal opinions. What matters is not a judge's political views, but whether they can set aside those views to do what the law and the Constitution require. I am pleased to say that I have found, without doubt, such a person. Tonight, it is my honor and privilege to announce that I will nominate Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court.
All right, that's the way it went down a month, 6 weeks ago, something like that. And probably if you had to choose Exhibit A, why the left is presidency of Donald Trump, it would be that that is the second Supreme Court justice he will have nominated. And they are worried sick about the future of the Supreme Court, which has changed the trajectory of this country for the last several decades in ways unimaginable, and probably will again if Brett Kavanaugh makes it through his battle in the Senate to be confirmed. Ken Kuklowski is all over this. He follows this very closely. He's closely connected with what's happening inside the White House. And I've asked Ken to join us this morning to update us on this nomination battle. Ken, thanks for joining us.
Sandy, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I should say that Ken is the Senior Counsel and Director of Strategic Affairs for the First Liberty Institute. And he writes for Breitbart News. He wears a ton of hats. And I can just tell you, because I know him, that he is really and truly one of the, he's like a walking encyclopedia of these judicial nominations and has great insight. So we really do appreciate your time, Ken. All right, so we know now, just in general, everyone knows that the left and the Democratic Party are out with the long knives for Brett Kavanaugh. But I want to know, do you think that they have, just as a broad question, do you think they have any real chance of stopping this nomination?
That's a great question, Sandy. The answer is no. The reality is that Republicans, by the slimmest of margins, hold the U.S. Senate by 50 to 49. It's not 51 because, of course, John McCain is in the late stages of battling brain cancer. So, I mean, he's not physically at the Senate, so we're down to 99 senators. So it's a 50 to 49 Senate. But the reality is, so long as all the Republican senators vote for Brett Kavanaugh, he will be confirmed. You can do it without a single Democratic vote. They are trying to stop him. They're trying any number of attacks. They're looking increasingly desperate in doing so. I'll start, though, with the global observation that this is it's sad that we've gotten to this place in terms of the dynamic in the Republic right now. Antonin Scalia was confirmed to the Supreme Court 98-0. His record as a conservative was an even longer record than Brett Kavanaugh's. On the flip side, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who had been the general counsel at the ACLU before she became a federal appeals judge, was very outspoken on issues of abortion and any number of issues. She was confirmed to the Supreme Court by a vote of 96-3. So, I mean, there was a day when it was accepted that a Republican president has the prerogative to nominate conservatives, a Democratic president has the prerogative to nominate liberals, and where senators from both parties would look to that person's education, experience, character, integrity, career accomplishments, and then they would vote on those things. Instead, the modern Democratic Party has now adopted the stance that if we would not have nominated with this person, then we will all vote against them as a block. And not only will we vote against them on the merits, we will vote to filibuster. And I mean, we've gotten to the point where, frankly, when there's a Republican president, the current dynamic is you really need to hold. You need to have a Republican-controlled Senate when you have a Republican-controlled White House, or these judicial seats, even on the U.S. Supreme Court, could actually go unfilled possibly for years. I mean, it's hard to see any limit to what the Senate Democrats are insisting upon here.
It is amazing, and it's been going on, you know, since and he was destroyed, and then that carried over to Clarence Thomas. And honestly, Ken, I've been in that Senate Judiciary Committee meeting with Patrick Leahy and Senator Kennedy and all the rest of them just shredding people since then in very unfair and dishonest ways. But that brings us the other side of the aisle. The Republicans are also troubling. So that brings me to the question, like, what about Susan Collins? What about Lisa Murkowski? What about Jeff Flake? What about Bob Corker? Honestly, how can we count on their vote in this nomination?
Well, I'll tell you, let's take those in order. First of all, the reality is, aside from Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, even though not every single Republican senator has yet weighed in, that there is absolutely no question regarding Bob Corker, regarding Jeff Flake. It's regarding kind of the more moderate wing. They've all made it clear, whether they've explicitly said I will vote yes or not. They've all made it clear that that they intend to support the president's well-qualified nominee. Now, regarding Collins and Murkowski, both of them, those are really the only swing votes among the Republicans on this. Out of all 50, those are really the only two. Let's take them in order. First of all, everything that they've said publicly, both of them, has been 100% positive and supportive. They've just said that they want to do this in a deliberate process where they're going to meet with the nominee, and then they're going to publicly announce their view. Right now, they've taken a step back, allowing the Senate Judiciary Committee members to be the first ones in line in terms of doing the interviews with Brett Kavanaugh. Neither of those senators, women senators, are on the Senate Judiciary Committee, so they're kind of keeping their powder dry until things are going past the committee stage and getting to the full Senate. Susan Collins has voted. Has voted now on every Supreme Court nomination for decades. She has never voted against any of them, either from a Republican president or a Democratic president. So it would be extremely unusual for this to be when Senator Collins starts opposing a Supreme Court nominee, again, from a president of either party. Murkowski, who has a much shorter history in the Senate than Susan Collins does. Murkowski's been there, but even then, she's been there around 16 years now, if my math is correct. It seems to be working in tandem with Susan Collins. Everything they say is positive. The issues that they care about in terms of, like in the case of Lisa Murkowski, with energy policy and deregulation, natural resources management, coming there from the state of Alaska, all of that you would expect rulings from Brett Kavanaugh in favor of free enterprise, in favor of an entrepreneurial, pro-growth, pro-jobs agenda, because that's what's codified in federal law and that's what's codified in federal regulation. So you would expect him, as a good judge, to not say that the U.S. Constitution raises any sort of roadblocks to those things, or to read environmental laws in such an expansive fashion that it stops all of those issues that Senator Collins would care about. So I think if you look at Brett Kavanaugh's resume, and if you look at everything that both of those female Republican senators have said, no one has any cause for concern. They have not yet announced their position, but everyone is confident that that when they do, it'll be a yes vote.
This is a little bit of a sidebar, but I'm curious because I don't understand this. John McCain, as you just mentioned, is very ill, probably
yes.
Never going to return, and he has not stepped aside, so his seat is vacant. He came back to make a really bad vote on health care, you know, defunding, stopping Obamacare, and he's made various statements that are not helpful to this administration, which is really an aside. But my question is, what is the rule regarding this? Can a senator just be absent forever if he has a long-term illness? Is there a time limit? What is the law or the rule, the congressional rules?
There would neither be a law nor a rule on this. This is established per the Constitution. he was elected to a six-year term, and unless a senator dies in office or resigns, the only way that they can be forced to vacate his seat. So his seat is not vacant. He's in his seat. He's not physically in it, but it's but the office is occupied. Is you could be removed by your fellow senators, but those are really the only ways that a senator. The only three ways to leave office are for your term to expire, to resign, to die, or to be removed. So now that I say that out loud, I realize those are four ways and not three. But I mean, it is.
It's a three-letter word, like J-O-B-S.
Right, that's right. So Senator McCain was elected to a six-year term, and so it's that there is no rule or statute that could remove a senator prematurely before that. So it's he is. He currently occupies that Senate seat, but as you say, he is unable to make it to the seat of government, to Washington D.C. And per the law, that is the only place that you can actually cast votes as a U.S. senator. So right now, we just don't have his vote one way or the other, and of course, just wish him well and pray for him during this time of severe illness, one where they're, you know, no one is talking about a route back to full health from yep. this situation.
Yeah, that's certainly that said, but I do think it. I'll just have to say, I will say it says a lot about his character that he does not step aside, so that seat with the gap being so close between Democrats and Republicans, I think a statesman would step aside. But that's another story. In fact, Kelly Ward, who's running for Senate,
I hear what you're saying. I'll push back on that potentially, just to say, what if he steps aside and the replacement who's appointed to take his seat is not a reliable vote? So I mean, that's always something that you have to consider.
Well, that's true.
I will say that the rumors in Arizona. Is that if Senator McCain would leave office, the chatter in Arizona is that his wife Cindy McCain would be appointed to fill that seat. With all due respect to Mrs. McCain, she has never been associated with any part of the conservative movement. She's openly pro-choice. People believe that she's to the left on matters of immigration, possibly on gun control. So again, her positions are not wide open public in that regard. But there's a lot of conservative leaders in Arizona who are grateful that Senator McCain is still in his seat.
Okay, all right. Well, that's a different perspective completely. As a matter of fact, Kelly Ward, who's running for Senate in Arizona, is going to join us in just a minute, Ken. So we'll Ashley follow up with her about that. All right, let's go back to Brett Kavanaugh, though. We only have a few minutes left. So here's the thing, just to explain to everyone, Brett used to work for the George W. Bush administration, so he has a long paper trail on things he wrote, advice he gave, different things that he's done. He also, of course, served on the D.C. Circuit Court and has over in excess of 300 opinions, so we pretty much know what he thinks about almost everything within his judicial opinions. But now the Democrats, of course, are eager to get a hold of everything he's written, you know, when he was younger, when he was in a different role. And they're also, the left, through the New York Times and others, are trying to get his wife's email. I just want to know, and my understanding is that actually the George W. Bush Library expedited the release of some of those papers recently. So is that going to slow down this process? Is the Judiciary Committee going to allow the Democrats to peruse this now, you know, probably endless trove of documents before the confirmation begins?
Well, we are actually still completely on track to have Judge Kavanaugh confirmed by October 1, which is the first day of the Supreme Court's next term. Right now, Senator Grassley, he still hasn't announced an official date, but it's widely expected that it'll be the week after Labor Day that the Senate Judiciary Committee is going to hold hearings. You are correct that it looks like there'll be 900,000 pages of documents that senators' offices are going through right now. I think the previous record third was Neil Gorsuch, which was 184,000 pages. So this is about five times that volume. But the reality is that minority members have absolutely no say on this. There are two decision makers here. That is Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. For stage one of the confirmation, it's in committee, and the chairman has absolute authority to say when we're going to have hearings and when we're going to vote. After that, it goes to the majority leader, who has unchecked authority on when to hold a vote on the Senate floor. And so if Chuck Grassley says on this date we're starting our hearing, and on this later date we're going to vote, so ready or not, here we come.
Okay.
But you better be reading fast, because we're going to hold this hearing, and it looks like they are holding to that schedule.
All right. Well, that's pretty amazing. And for that, we are grateful to the leadership. I so seldom say nice things about the leadership of the Republican Party and the Senate anyway. So I will affirm that that's a very good thing that they're doing. Ken Kuklowski of First Liberty and Breitbart News and other things. Ken, thanks for your expertise.
Thanks so much,
Sandy. Appreciate your time. God bless you too. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
As chair of the Border Committee, I passed a law to fast-track veterans for border jobs. Now I'm working with President Trump to secure our border and keep Arizona families safe.
My friend, Martha McSally, she's the real deal. She's tough.
But there's more to do. As your senator, I'll crack down on sanctuary cities, enforce the law, build the wall, and give our border agents what they need to complete their mission. I'm Martha McSally, and I approve this message.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. We talked this week, did we not, about the elections and the difference money can make and how ads can be created to make someone sound anyway. Could I just say that Martha McSally, she's running for Senate in Arizona. From the Conservative Review, her score is F on her voting record, 33%. Heritage Action for America, her score is F, 55%. Freedom Works, her score is F, 57%. And on we could go. Martha McSally's ad maybe doesn't quite capture her voting record. In that particular race, you know that Jeff Flake stepped aside. I think he's put his finger to the wind and saw that he didn't have much of a chance. He was such an opponent to President Trump. He decided not to run again. And so it's an open seat. And in its vacuum came Dr. Kelly Ward, who is well known to Arizonans. She's been a state senator, very successful. She is a conservative candidate who challenged John McCain, actually, just a few years ago. And to make it really interesting, a third person threw their hat in the ring, and that's Joe Arpaio. Joe Arpaio, of course, is the famous sheriff from Maricopa County, who's been a hero to many of us. But you can imagine now what's happening. Martha McSally with her F scorecard, regardless of that clip that we just heard. And Kelly Ward, a Rock Rib conservative. Joe Arpaio, a champion of conservatives. So what do you think's happening? Well, what's happening is, of course, the conservative vote is split. And Martha McSally, who really is the swamp pick, is getting a lot of money and attention. All right, so that's good. I want to talk to Kelly Ward today because I want to find out what's happening in the race. Dr. Kelly Ward, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Sandy. It's great to be with you. And, we're seeing the same playbook used in this election, which is, tell lies to conservatives, be a campaign conservative on the campaign trail during election time, and then go to Washington and legislate liberally. Martha, as you mentioned, has a failing grade with every conservative group out there. And now she's trying to convince voters that she's tough on the border and she wants to stop sanctuary cities, all things that she's actually been a promoter of in the past. She's actually voted for amnesty 11 times. 11. Has said again and again that walls don't work and that we will never have a wall. Didn't support President Trump during the election. Refuses to say, even if she voted for him, allowed Hillary Clinton to win the congressional district that she represents as the Republican so-called leader in that area. She allowed Hillary to win by 5 points. She joined Jeff Flake and John McCain in not attending the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, basically in protest of President Trump, or nominee Trump at that point. And now she's got ads where she spliced together words that Donald Trump said back in 2017 that had nothing to do with her running for the United States Senate, but had to do with her being a pilot in the military, to again mislead voters into thinking she's something she's not. People here in Arizona are sick and tired of political charlatans, of basically people who will do or say anything to get into office. And unfortunately, Martha and my Democrat opponent, Kyrsten Sinema, have lots of money to be able to try to recreate themselves in the minds of voters. And they both have moved to the right, which I'm proud of. They've moved to the right. But I have to say, we don't need a cheap imitation. We need the real thing. And the one that's the real deal in this race, the conservative champion, the honest, open, authentic, accessible person in this race is me, Dr. Kelly Ward. So we're working very, very hard. We worked hard to get Jeff Flake out of that race. I always say we helped to create that vacuum, because I was up on him by about 30 points when he decided to, air quotes, retire from the Senate. I think he's already retired when I see that he's in Zimbabwe instead of confirming President Trump's judicial nominees. So, I'll be glad when he's gone and I'm there taking his place and getting to work for the people of our state and for the people of our country.
Yeah, and so to put this in perspective, when Jeff Flake stepped aside, as you just said, you were planning on running. There were two seats. Like, there's John McCain's seat is going to be in play, and then there's Jeff Flake's seat that came up. So you had already challenged John McCain once before. People know mm-hmm. you. You've served as a state senator. So the polls were showing that Jeff Flake was in an abysmal place, and he just conveniently decided to step down. So now mm-hmm. you are in a strong position to win his seat. So then enter, the establishment, who don't want you to have that seat, Kelly. So repeat again for me, if you will, who is backing Martha McSally?
Martha McSally is handpicked by Mitch McConnell. He actually has said that he's going to crush conservatives in primaries. I put up on my Twitter that I'm uncrushable because of that, because we are uncrushable. She's definitely supported by the Never Trump movement. Just in fact, this week, the Never Trumpers, many in Arizona, that are multi-millionaires, if not billionaires, have pooled their resources to put some attack ads out against me. Now, Martha would like you to believe she's leading so drastically in the polls, but that certainly isn't the case. Martha actually came out and attacked me on my 100% pro-life voting record this week, herself from her campaign, and then she has her cronies out basically attacking me because I support the Fourth Amendment, I support the Constitution, and I want all of our agencies. We've seen what happens when federal agencies run amok. If you look at what's happening with the FBI and you look at the investigations and the probes that are going on, the misuse and abuse of the FISA process, I certainly want accountability, and I certainly want our agencies to follow the Constitution and adhere and uphold our right to privacy. So they're attacking me for things that the American people hold dear, and it's backfiring on them because I have built real relationships across our entire state as well as across the nation. People know who I am, and they're coming to my defense, and they're seeing that the people from the swamp, including Martha, including Kyrsten Sinema, including, leadership, unfortunately, that they want to maintain the status quo. I say the status quo has got to go. I'm looking hard to bring Arizona, AZ to DC, not DC to AZ. We've had it too long under Flake and McCain, and it's time for us to bring Arizona to Washington, DC.
You know, it was interesting, Kelly, to see this week the president last minute endorsed Kris Kobach against the advice of his, in White House counseling. No, he's too conservative, too controversial. I'm imagining the same thing is going on with you. Maybe you can't say, but has the president has not endorsed then Martha McSally or anyone in the race yet?
He has not officially endorsed, but if you look at the history, the only person that the president has said he is glad to see running in this United States Senate race is me, Dr. Kelly Ward. And, you know, I hope that he's looking at what's happening across the country, because I know he wants to continue his winning streak. Who doesn't? And so I'd love to have him come on board here, because I'm definitely the champion of the people. I'm definitely the choice of the people. And the swamp wants to keep me out. He needs to drain the swamp. He needs to get rid of these swamp dwellers, not be convinced by people who might be giving him bad advice. But, you know, I'd love to have him come on board anytime, before the primary or after. I know he'll come in after, so that we have a decisive win. I just think, you know, wow, if the president came in now, 3 weeks before the election, a little less than 3 weeks before Election Day, and endorsed me in this race, we could start focusing on taking down Kyrsten Sinema right now. It's unfortunate that Mitch and his company, all of the people that are affiliated with that style, which is people cut from the same cloth as John McCain and Jeff Flake, that they had to choose this path, because we as Republicans, when Jeff Flake dropped out, had access to a well-educated, well-spoken, down-to-earth, constitution-loving, conservative woman who happens to be a female, a physician, a trained problem solver, a trained healer, a military wife, the mom of three awesome kids, and I have dogs. The Democrats would be salivating over me, other than my love of the Constitution and conservative principles, and our party seems to want to say they want what I am, but then they can't put their money where their mouth is.
Yeah, well, and then enter the third actor in this, and that's Joe Arpaio. And let me just say, Kelly, that I've long admired Joe. I've interviewed him so many times. He's just an old, big old bear, and he's done a lot of wonderful things. He's had a lot of courage in the immigration fights in Arizona, made a lot of name for himself there. But surprisingly, like when your race was well along, he throws his hat into the Senate race. He's 86, which is, you know, it's not a very logical move. It's very seems he always has had such good judgment. It just does not seem like good judgment. But what's that doing? I mean, he has such strong support in Arizona. What do you think? How do you think the people are responding to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think most people are very disappointed in Joe and the decisions that he's made. They know he can't win. There are a few diehard Joe supporters. Many of them aren't in Arizona. He has very, very few votes. He's hired staff that are criminals, crooks, confabulators, creeps, drug arrests, felony warrants. The people he has surrounding him are horrific. And if you look at his entire campaign, there has not been one negative thing said about Martha McSally. The entire campaign is set to drive a wedge between me and conservative voters, to tell lies about me and about my family, and basically to make sure, or to make it much easier for Martha McSally to take this seat. There is nothing in the way that he's been running that shows that he's trying to win. The only thing that his campaign shows is that he's trying to make it hard for me to win, and which is very, very sad. Conservatives have to realize that, you know, Joe has never made policy and made law. So we don't really know where he stands from a conservative perspective. But if you look at his history of who he's supported, he actually was instrumental in forcing Janet Napolitano onto the people of Arizona. He made a big ad with Janet Napolitano when she was running against conservative Matt Salmon. And Arizona is still climbing out of the hole that Joe and Janet put us in with the overspending by the tune of billions, to making it so that Arizona had to mortgage our very own Capitol buildings. And so I think that as people look at all of that, they realize that there's only one true conservative in the race. That actually there's three candidates, but only one choice. One choice if we really want to change Washington. And they're flocking to us. And I think that's why the establishment is scared, why Martha is attacking me because about life, for goodness sake. And the insiders are trying to create just to create a scared feeling in voters if they go against the will of the swamp. We're going against the will of the swamp. We're winning this thing. We're, you know, I think we're going to win the primary decisively. And we already know that I'm going very strong into the general. I'm actually the only candidate that can win, though the establishment would like to create a fear that that can't happen either. I know we're rallying support of conservatives, of regular Republicans, of independents, and even from many Democrats who have walked away from the radicalness that they're seeing in their party. So we've got everything going for us, and we're going to win on August 28th.
Let me just say August 28th. Also, let me add for those of you listening, one of the things that we've learned through the years is sometimes, I'm from Illinois, so I can say this with great authority, sometimes you don't have a senator or that you can support. You just can't. You can't work for them. You can't support them financially. You're disgusted by who's representing your state. But you can reach out across state lines. You can give money. You can make phone calls. You can help in other ways, even though you don't live in that state. Because the Senate, each senator represents the United States, even if they represent their own state. They make policy for the entire country. And so much is at stake here. This is, again, Arizona's Senate seat. The primary is August 28th. And my guest has been Dr. Kelly Ward. Kelly, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate it so much.
Thanks, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.